Conference Committee on Senate Bill 2642 will come to order. Welcome, everyone. I think maybe we could just have, it's the first time Representative Atkins and I have ever co-chaired a conference committee before, so maybe we could have members of the table introduce themselves. So from the Senate, I'm Senator Sandy Pappas. Let's do our House guests first.
Joe Atkins from Inver Grove Heights.
Chris Kwapik, Committee Administrator for Representative Atkins.
Andrew Biggerstaff, House Research.
Leon Lilly, House Member.
Joe Hoppe, the House Member from Chaska.
Pete Voivich, Legislative Assistant to Representative Atkins.
Trevor Oliver, House Research Staff, DFL Caucus Research Staff.
We need more people on our side of the table.
Trying to get them. Cara Josephson, Committee Administrator for Senator Pappas.
Stephanie James, Senate Counsel for Senator Pappas.
Chris Eaton, I'm the Senator from Brooklyn Center, Brooklyn Park.
And Senator Chamberlain, I think, should be joining us soon. He's our other conferee. And we also are waiting for someone from our fiscal division to be able to talk about the money differences. Just for fun, let's see who all is in the audience. So if you want to just introduce yourselves quickly and where you're affiliated. We have to really make a lot of this conference committee.
This is fun.
So let's start over here.
Hi, Margaret Van Heel, Stinson Leonard Street.
All right.
Cassidy, Stinson Leonard Street.
Todd Hill, Hill Capital Strategies.
Judy Cook, Cook Gerard Associates.
Rob Layton, Nolan Thompson Layton.
And then the second row back here.
Mike Carbo, Minnesota Grocers.
Katie Carbo, Lackage, Wilmot.
Christine Zimmer, Winthrop and Weinstein.
Blake Johnson, Prairie Island Indian Community.
Mike Erlinson.
Kevin Toma, Minnesota Petroleum Marketers Association.
Bill Strasinski, Minnesota Petroleum Marketers. Al Lund, Allied Charities of Minnesota.
Ray Bone, Allied Charities.
Danny Smith, GTEC Corporation.
Jenny Canfield, Minnesota State Lottery.
Ted Van Petten, Minnesota Lottery.
Ada Van Roon, Minnesota.
And
Jim Gerard, Cook Gerard Associates.
Why don't we go to the back row in the middle, and then we'll jump over to the left.
Craig Fitzgerald, Link 3.
Buck Humphrey, Forbes State.
Richie Ginsburg, Mille Lacs Bank.
Reed LeBeau, Jacobson Lager.
Kathy
Honey,
Baker Daniels.
Chris Jorgicus, Golf Public.
Brent Erdahl, Minnesota Indian Gaming Association.
When we get the design of the new Capitol, I think we're not going to have pillars in our way. Or the new building, we won't. Okay, over here on the left.
Of course, it's going to collapse, but other than that.
I don't think this will be a public hearing room anymore. It's going to be a caucus room, Senator Atkins, Representative Atkins.
Go ahead. Is that Lauren over there?
Lauren Key.
Jake Grassel, Citizens Against Gambling Expansion.
Jim King, NRB.
Colin Marshall, Native Public Affairs.
I'm Doug Belton, Minor Press.
Andy Plato, North State Advisors.
Ed Grindahl, Lockridge Grindahl.
Dan Larson, Lockridge Grindahl.
It's actually kind of usable. It's here. Mm-hmm. Do we get everybody? And then I think we might have some staff people up here at the table. And over here. All right. Anybody I missed? The gentleman walking in, you need to introduce yourself. You're the last person. All right. Welcome, everyone. Then, as is usual in a conference committee, we're going to ask Ms. James to just go through the side-by-side.
Madam Chair and members, I believe Senator Pappas would prefer that I focus on the differences. Most of the article is the same. So you have a sheet that is labeled SF 2642 comparison that identifies the different provisions. And the first difference, which is just a minor formatting difference, is on page R8. And R9. Uh, On the Senate side, Section 17, lines 9.9 through 9.12. The Senate has some new language without adding a new... the Senate adds... The language is the same, but the House adds a paragraph... letter designation before a new sentence. So on line 9.9 on the Senate side, the sentence beginning a volunteer, and then on the House side on page 9, line 16, they have a letter E before that same sentence.
I'm sorry, we have a bill on the Senate floor that we need to go vote for, so we'll just be in a short recess while we run up there.
You do?
Final vote.
I got it already.
Oh, you voted first. That's efficient.
Lucky.
Introduce themselves again
for him. Who are you?
We had the whole room introduce
themselves.
We did. We'd have them do it again for you.
Oh, would you?
Down there was the, you know, the favorite color and the sing along. You'll have to do that alone. Figuring something out there. Trying anyway.
Okay, the conference committee will come back to order, and Ms. James, why don't you continue?
Madam Chair and members, and then after that similarity that I just spent a lot of words describing, not much difference, there are four provisions that are substantively different between the House and the Senate position. The House has three provisions that the Senate does not have, and the Senate has one that the House does not have. And I'll let House staff describe their three provisions that are not in the Senate bill. But I'll start with the Senate provision that is not in the House bill, which is on page R12 and R13 of the side-by-side. Section 25. So it begins on the bottom of page R12 and goes on to page R13. This provision specifies that the director of the lottery is not authorized to sell or contract to sell lottery tickets through a website or through a self-service device that is part of, shares a display with, or is adjacent to a retail petroleum dispenser. So what we commonly refer to as play at the pump.
And then did you talk about the House provisions?
I did not. I would leave it to House staff to describe their provisions.
Great.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, there are three provisions contained in the House bill that were not contained in the Senate bill. The first one's on page 8 of the side-by-side. It begins on line 8.26 and goes to line 8.32. That's a provision that would allow a raffle in conjunction with wild game or fish-taking event, similar to what's already contained in law for an ice fishing contest. The next provision is on page 12 of the side-by-side, and it begins on line 12.32 to 8. And what that does is on line 13.2, you can see that or debit cards is struck from existing law, allowing debit cards to be used to purchase gambling equipment or chances to engage in charitable gambling. And then line 13.11 through 13.13 would allow an organization to accept debit cards and payment for gambling equipment or chance to participate in charitable gaming.
Yeah, we're excused now. I don't think we have to vote on that. Any questions from members of the conference committee? Could you tell us a little bit more about Section 16? Because I think Section 25 and 26 were in our bill originally and were removed with floor amendments. But I haven't really seen Section 16 before. Anybody on the House side know anything about that?
I can offer this much. Madam Chair, it was Representative Moline's language. She has, as the summary, the section for people that are paying attention, it says to permit conduct of a raffle in conjunction with a wild game, not the hockey team, but wild game or fish. Taking event by an organization permits the sale of a combined event and raffle ticket. My understanding is that in Representative Lean's district, they have some of these contests in conjunction with fishing or hunting. It's my understanding from the gambling control folks is that they have language in our bill that they're satisfied with and thought would allow that to function without running afoul of any of the rules. I believe it went on either by a vote. It's not unanimously. It was very strong support in the House. And I don't believe that there was any opposition in the House, for that matter. Nobody spoke against it. There was no audible argument against it.
Senator Tomasoni must have been asleep at the switch that he didn't do it in the Senate. We'll have to chastise him.
I'm assuming he just expected you to accept the House language because that's what you generally do, right?
I think I've accepted enough language from Representative Moline for a lifetime.
If I might, wow, Madam Chair, if I might ask about, I didn't follow the debate with respect to it's page R12. There's two sections that we have in the House bill regarding the use of debit cards in place of cash. Not credit cards, mind you, but debit cards.
Credit cards are not allowed.
And we're not proposing to allow them, but many people now just carry debit cards in place of cash, which is how things have operated in Minnesota with cash payment for these sorts of gaming activities. But was there an extended argument or point of view that the Senate wanted to... After your debate, I didn't hear any. Nobody came running over saying. So I didn't get the impression that it was an enormous issue. But it sounds like you actually had it in your bill, and then there was an explicit vote to take those provisions out.
It was a Senator
Ms. James,
Hall.
You remember Senator Hall,
Madam Chair, and members. It was Senator Hall who made the motion on this, and you supported it. And
she has a better memory than I do.
I had to look up.
It's almost like you've been involved in a few issues this session, Madam Chair.
Let's just not talk about rulemaking, okay?
And again, in the House, that provision was not objected to at any stage that I remember. And I'm looking to Representative Toppy or Lilly or Mr. Biggerstaff, but I don't recall it. Our bill had bipartisan support throughout. There was no objection to that debit provision. That's why I'm kind of curious as to how strongly it was the position of the Senate.
Senator Chamberlain?
Yeah, well, obviously the concern, we don't have credit cards in here for an obvious reason, and that was the same concern they had with debit cards. It's convenient, but they don't want to make it so convenient that you can run it up. With credit cards, it's convenient, and you can certainly run it up quite a bit on a credit card. The concern here is obviously if you give access, are they going to, you know, deplete their checking account? So that was the concern.
Madam Chair and Senator, thank you.
Representative Atkins.
Is it possible? I know that we've got Senate fiscal staff, I think, is going to go through. I don't know if they're here yet. I just haven't. Well, here
Mr.
we
Lundin
go.
Is here.
I'm just curious, and I know we're not looking for lengthy testimony about the elements of the bill, but maybe on these couple provisions, since there's a difference there, if we could hear from Gambling Control and from ACM, either today or perhaps the next meeting, at the discretion of the chair, but see if they have objections to that or concerns about it.
Certainly. But let's continue with kind of our overview. Senator Chamberlain, you offered the Senate amendment as the floor amendment. The differences on the Senate side about the sale of lottery tickets. Did you want to talk about that at all?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Well, briefly, we understand that gaming and gambling in Minnesota and anywhere is a sensitive issue. And the concern here, there were several concerns and with this piece of the legislation and why we added it. As you all know, the current statute is silent on whether or not the commissioner can expand into online gaming or, as we've called it, play at the pump. Because it was silent, some actions were taken over the last few years to do just that, move into that market. So the arguments cut across several lines. Legislative authority, because it's a sensitive issue, protecting taxpayers, and because this system has not worked in Kansas. They shut it down in Kansas because it wasn't making any money. Fairness, because the current system right now is set up where the commissioner gets to choose the particular players who can participate play at the pump. And when they do that, they get free equipment. And the free equipment is means a lot, and it changes it affects the fairness in the competitive market. You get a mom and pop on one side of the street, another station on the other side of the street, and the commissioner happens to say, well, they have the software that works with this vendor. They can get the software for the equipment for free, thereby putting a competitive disadvantage to the mom and pop across the street. So legislative prerogative, authority, protecting taxpayers, fairness, and I would say the last one, obviously, concerns about expansion of gaming. Some people would argue that this is not necessarily expansion of gaming because of the amount of sales, but many people would argue that we're expanding gaming, and they don't want that. They think it's too accessible to children, especially online. So for those four reasons, we wanted to put that in there. Fairness, legislative prerogative, taxpayer protection, expansion of gaming. I had wide, almost unanimous support on the Senate floor, voice vote. There were a couple of people who said no, but it was unanimous for the most part. Our position, I guess, is fairly clear in that sense. I would also, I guess, I would go back and add that the tribes have an interest here as well. So there are a lot of issues here that would need to be resolved before we move on and allow the commissioner to do this. My personal opinion, legislative prerogative is very important. Just because the statute was silent didn't mean he had legal authority to do it, especially for such a sensitive area. I'm sympathetic to, and my colleagues are sympathetic to, vendors who have engaged in this venture, but to have previous experience in Kansas where they shut it down because it wasn't generating sales, then to open up an agreement with vendors in a risky adventure and assume no risk and no reserves is not the fault of the taxpayer to bear that burden.
Senator Chamberlain, are you talking about the pay at the pump?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry.
Just wanted to clarify.
So I understand also Senator Scoy has had some money set aside in the tax bill to cover and help make the vendors whole in this situation. So that's our position. That's why we put it up there. Hopefully we can come to some resolution. Like I said, almost unanimous in the Senate. And I know it's a difficult issue, controversial. People got money in it. But Someone said to me, I have a great amount of respect for the commissioner, Mr. Van Patten, but he entered into a bad deal does not somehow then make us responsible to protect that deal. It was probably not the right thing to do. I regret that on his part, but we have taxpayers to protect, we have a fairness issue, we have legislative prerogative, and we have the expansion issue. So I think it's far too important to not have in the bill. It'll make it clear and unequivocal about where we have to go. Thank you for your time, Madam Chair.
And I just wanted to mention to the House members that our bill got a 55-2 vote.
Yeah, thank you.
Very strong, obviously bipartisan support. That's a very good segue, Senator Chamberlain, to Mr. Lundeen to talk about the money, and I believe it's in the supplemental finance bill.
Yes, thank you, Senator Pappas. I'll talk from the fiscal note. I think everybody should have a copy of the fiscal note, and I'll just kind of briefly run through the numbers on there. If you take a look at the first page of the fiscal note, this is showing the loss of revenue that will be coming to the state from the prohibition. Just kind of quickly, in fiscal year 14, the $2.5 million cost is the loss due to the contracts being broken. This represents a payment to the vendor and the cost that then would be distributed between the general fund and the environmental trust fund using the 60-40 split. And then when you're moving out to fiscal year 15 and beyond, this is then the loss of the net proceeds and in lieu of sales tax and being distributed to the various funds. The loss represents in fiscal year 15, the loss to the general fund, including the payment to the vendor, is $1.7 million, or a total of $2.9 million to all funds. And then you can see that it grows as you go out into the tails in fiscal years 16 and 17.
Sorry, Mr. Lundeen, we're talking about the fiscal note?
Yes.
Maybe I missed something to what you're referring to, because I'm only seeing 1.5 in the current year.
Yeah, in the current year, the 1.5 and the other million down there, bringing it to a total of 2.5, okay. That represents the loss due to the contract being broken, the payment to the vendor, and then how that would flow back to the general fund and to the environmental trust fund. Then when you're going forward from fiscal year 15 and beyond, this is then the actual loss in sales as it's flowing back to the loss of revenue to the state. And so that would be a total of $2.9 million, including the vendor in fiscal years 14 and 15. And then looking out into the tails of fiscal years 16 and 17, it would be a loss of $11.7 million then distributed amongst those various funds.
Add these two together.
And the methodology that the lottery used is laid out on pages 3, 4, and 5 of the fiscal note. And I can briefly just kind of run through some of the assumptions that they used, if you would like, or...
Go ahead.
Okay. So taking a look at page 2, the lottery... And I should note this fiscal note was prepared by the lottery and then signed off by MMB. So the assumptions are that the traditional way that we've been selling the lottery products are in decline. They're talking in the fiscal note that the monthly sales have been declining. They're expecting this fiscal year compared to last fiscal year probably a 4% decline in sales. The decline, they're saying, is due to some changing market conditions, and one of the main conditions is younger adults are not playing and participating in the lottery as much as they were in the past. And going down to the last paragraph on page 2, they're talking about the sales trends They're saying fiscal year 14, they're 4% below that of fiscal year 13, and this trend will continue going down. Fiscal year 15, it'll be 7% below. Fiscal year 13, fiscal year 16 will be 11% less, and fiscal year 14 will be 14%.
Fiscal year 17.
Yes. Okay, and so then what they're doing is taking these losses against the amount that they have used in the their forecasts that have been used in the February forecast by MMB and that. And that's kind of how they arrived at the numbers on the front page. They're saying that about 80% due to the prohibition of the loss here will be attributable to the internet sales. When they were doing their forecasts, they were planning to make up a portion of some of this decline through the internet sales. And I should point out the play at the pump sales are not included in these numbers. They weren't included in the forecast, so they're not showing in the numbers presented on the fiscal note. And as you go through the fiscal note, I think the rest of it is just kind of going through the methodology of you know how they arrived at the numbers, how much they're attributing to the prohibition of the internet sales and that, and then how they're distributing it to the various funds. So I don't know if there's any additional questions on that. Or
Madam Chair.
Representative Atkins.
Maybe I'm just missing it in the fiscal note, but how much today, how much is comes in as a result of online sales from the lottery?
It says, I think, the most recent high Powerball jackpot run, which lasted for 16 draws from December 2013 through February 2014, resulted in sales of $14.4 million. And it talks about the Powerball run was 24.2. I don't think, let's see. Okay. Monthly sales are $44.868 million per month.
That's on page two.
I think that's the number, $44.868 million per month.
Is that the total amount of sales?
That's the total amount of sales. I'm not sure that I have the number of how much is attributable to total to the internet sales. It might be helpful to have somebody from MMB or the lottery to respond to that question.
That would be helpful if we could.
Mr. Van Petten, could you tell us of that average $44.868 million per month, how much of that is online, due to online sales?
Right now, the...
Just introduce yourself,
I'm
please.
I'm sorry. Ed Van Petten, Executive Director, Minnesota State Lottery. Madam Chair, members of the committee, the... Online sales of draw games right now is running a little over $1 million a year since sales began in November of 2010. The sales have slowly grown annually, and now are annually about $1 million for online games. Since February 6th, with the electronic instant tickets, we have sold about $235,000 worth. During that same time period, we've sold about $145 million in traditional sales. So the last calculation was just less than 0.1% of sales were attributable to online sales.
Thank you. Mr. Lundin, I wanted to ask you, in terms of the fiscal note, who is carrying this money? Is this money being carried anywhere? Because we don't have it here.
Yeah, my understanding is it is carried in the supplemental budget target that Senator Cohen and Representative Carlson have.
Okay. And can you tell me how much is being carried in the supplemental target?
I believe the amounts that are reflected on the fiscal note are being carried there. So if you're looking at the general fund amount, which we basically focus on, would be the $1.7 million for the 14-15 biennium and $5.8 million in general fund for the tails in fiscal years 16 and 17.
So they're carrying the general fund money. They're not carrying the loss to the Environmental Trust Fund. They're not making the Environmental Trust Fund whole.
They wouldn't be making it whole. We would be tracking those losses, but we wouldn't be making it whole.
Okay.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative Atkins.
Thank you. I guess back to my initial point, and I don't know if this is for fiscal staff or perhaps for Mr. Van Petten, but I'm just not tracking how we arrived at numbers. Mr. Van Petten referenced 0.1% of the lottery's revenues are attributable to online sales. And as a result of that, about $1 million a year in power bill, $235,000 a year in scratch-off. And yet the numbers that are reflected on the fiscal note in this biennium are $2.9 million, and in the out biennium is approaching $12 million. I'm just not, the math is.
Maybe we could ask Mr. King, who did the fiscal note from MMB. I heard he is here to kind of walk us through that.
And I raise that because it would be off the charts in terms of anticipated sales.
Mr. King, how did you arrive at the numbers?
Madam Chair, Jim King from MMB. Actually, the lottery came up with the numbers. We reviewed the numbers with them. We don't actually do the calculations on the numbers. As I said, the lottery based the sales, based these calculations on their sales, figures. I think basically what they're saying is they've started out their online sales very slowly here, but they've been anticipating this increase that they talk about in the fiscal note to make up for the lost traditional games, and that's even the current sales are very small, but they're anticipating those to increase because of the without the prohibition, they're anticipating those online sales to increase. I don't have the detailed numbers on their sales.
Well, and I think I might be able to answer some of my own question. I was the numbers that I referenced actually talked about the costs as well, and I'm assuming that includes some settlement with the current vendors in terms of loss of revenues in the upper portion of the fiscal note. It's still anticipated that we're talking about $3.2 million in lost revenues, which squares a little bit better with what Mr. Van Petten said earlier. $1 million a year in Powerball, $235,000. And Mr. Van Petten, when you talked about, you described, are those the scratch-offs? They're commonly referred to as scratch-offs now?
Mr. Van Petten.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, Representative, first of all, the $1 million a year is for all draw games. That's Powerball, Mega Millions, Gopher 5, North Star Cash, Daily 3. And the figure for electronic instant tickets that I gave you was simply since February 6th when they went live until now. So we don't have a firm number for expected annual sales on that because it is a new product to us. Our research has been based on mostly the European models and the Canadian models, so we think the first full year we will see some growth, slow growth, but the history has shown that, you know, after a full year it just starts growing faster in all of the models we have examined, and that's why the sales figures appear somewhat low and conservative for FY15 in my opinion, but then grow a little more in the third and fourth year after that.
Madam Chair.
Senator Chamberlain.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Van Petten. So I just want to confirm. So you said that you expect sales of online lottery to increase after how many years?
Well, within the in the second, third, fourth year, sir. Okay. Slowly.
Madam Chair?
The one factor involved, Senator, is that beginning last fall, you could buy draw tickets for the lotto-style games on the same day of the drawing. But prior to that, there was a one-day delay before a ticket became active, and that has increased single game sales somewhat. So all of those factors and improving the system, we think, will generate additional sales.
Senator Chamberlain.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Van Patten. Also, I just want to preface that you were put in a difficult spot. I understand that, and you have a lot of experience, so I understand that and appreciate your work and efforts. But I have to ask, so in Kansas, you had 3 years of experience in Kansas, and they shut it down because the sales just didn't grow. The forecasts here, 3 years, show it's not really growing that much, and currently a tenth of a percent of the total lottery sales are attributable to online. So I also read in here you're looking at Illinois and British Columbia. So exactly what models are we following? Because certainly they didn't work in Kansas because they decided to shut it down. Cost benefit wasn't there. And here, after 3 years, marketing aside, sales are still low. So going back to taxpayer issues here and just purely looking at that, why are we to expect that, as I spoke to you earlier, why are we to expect that that will grow? We really didn't expect the market to grow because we have a finite market of gamers out there, gamblers, I would expect. 100% of us in here will not gamble, maybe a ticket here and there. So the market has some level, right? 70%, 50% of Minnesotans will buy tickets, whatever that number might be. So do you actually expect to try to grow that number by a substantial amount? Will we be able to? That's something we should know by experience. And because I was told we weren't really going to be able to do that. And if the idea is to bump the state revenues up again by selling these things online and at the pump, but we don't expect the market to go up. So going back to Representative Atkins' point, some of the numbers and the projections here, low projections, bad experience in Kansas, 3 bad years here. We don't expect the market to grow that much because you said to me we're not really expanding gaming because we're really not growing the market. So what are we looking here? Are we looking at $20 million a month in this stuff, or why would we continue to do this if we've had bad models and bad experience?
Mr. Van Patten.
Madam Chair, Senator. I don't know who told you that this model had been tried in Kansas, but they lied to you.
Okay.
It has never been tried in Kansas. Play at the pump has never even been discussed in Kansas, and it is specifically prohibited by statute in Kansas.
Oh, Madam Chair, I got an article here that says that, and I got research here that goes day, month by month, day by day, week by week, what they did in Kansas. So what am I missing? They started this online, world's first sort of online sales of tickets, right?
Or what did they sell? Are you talking about online or play at the pump?
I think online or play at the pump, either one.
No, sir.
So what was it in Kansas that they started in 2004 and then they dropped 3 years later because of low sales?
I'm sorry, Madam Chair, Senator. That was a lotto-style game called E-Scratch, mm-hmm. where you bought a ticket at the retail level, and it had an authorization code that you could access a website and then determine the draw of the game on that website.
Okay.
It was also called E-Scratch, and we have trademarked that name here for our online electronic instant tickets. But that game had no similarities whatsoever except for the ability to play an interactive game on the Internet. And the players could simply buy the ticket and turn around and check it to see if it was a winner. It was just an instant ticket.
Okay. One final question, and I guess we didn't get to the larger point. You say that model doesn't apply. So we have 3 years of experience here. We don't expect the market we're not trying to expand the market, right? That's what I heard, and because we don't think it'll grow that much. Again, 100% of us won't do it. So why do we get these great projections and thoughts out after 3, 4, 5 years? Why do we think it's going to reach those great levels?
Mr. Van Patten.
Madam Chair, Senator, we do extensive research, and we have found that the lottery simply is not on the radar of young adults anymore. Our average player is growing older, and sales are going down. When young adults are introduced to some lottery games, they find them to be very entertaining and enjoy them. And that's what our research has shown. We do an annual research study through St. Cloud State. Our ad agency does extensive research. And we just feel that the added brand awareness that an internet presence will bring will educate our players and bring more players into the retail environment, as has been shown in every jurisdiction that has introduced this product worldwide.
Okay, that's all for now, Madam Chair. Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Van Patten.
Ripson Atkins.
Madam Chair, Mr. Van Patten, I'd like to talk about the contracts that you have with the vendors. Before I do that, though, I want to give you an opportunity to respond to on that point with respect to young people playing. I actually had our staff, Mr. Oliver, look at, and here's what we found is that from 2004 to 2012, lottery revenues are up 35%. In fact, each year we are setting new records. Sure. During that same period of time, play by millennials, or so 25 to 34 year olds, has actually declined by 12%. So in the, you know, and I know you're concerned about that, but in spite of that steady decline by 25 to 34 year olds, we've actually seen record after record after record. And the indication in the fiscal note is that if we stop the online sales, then suddenly we're going to see this precipitous drop in revenues. The fact is that the 25 to 34 year olds already are declining in the amount of play, and you're only talking about 0.1% of the overall revenues are coming from. So I'm trying to square with the fiscal note what you've been reporting over the last 8 years, which is you've got already less play by 25 to 34 year olds, and yet you're still experiencing record after record after record. How does that square?
Well,
Mr. Van Patten.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair, Representative. Over the last, say, decade, jackpot levels on the Mega Games, Powerball, Mega Millions, have caused quite a stir. In fact, my first month in Minnesota, we had the world record jackpot in Mega Millions, and there were lines of people lining up to buy tickets. Last year, we had a record Powerball jackpot, and people lined up to buy tickets. In this fiscal year, we had a near-record level jackpot in Powerball, and our sales were almost $10 million less on that jackpot run. So the high jackpot games are just not drawing the attention they have in years past. And, you know, the industry refers to it as jackpot fatigue. I don't know if it's that or changing in advertising, but we know to get our product before the the adults of this generation, we have to try something different, and that's what the internet presence does. That's why Illinois introduced it before we did, and that's the kind of growth they have shown. British Columbia, same thing. The UK, same thing. German lotteries. But it's a slow growth pattern, but it kind of, I don't know, mushrooms. But it's never going to amount to a silver bullet. We hope that it will be just a marketing technique that will generate additional interest in our product.
Thank you. And
Atkins.
And I hope someday to have jackpot fatigue, where I've just won so many times that I get tired of winning. with respect to the contracts, Mr. Van Patten, there's a reference in the fiscal note to should this occur, specifically getting out of the business, there'd be an expenditure of $2.5 million in FY14 Can you walk us through what the contracts are with the vendors and what the anticipated, where you're coming up with those figures?
Mr. Van Patten.
Yes, Madam Chair and Representative. In 2011 and early 2012, negotiations were begun with vendors to improve the internet offerings that the Minnesota Lottery had at that time, the subscription sales. Negotiations were had with the vendors that provide those types of systems, and the vendor we ended up negotiating with previously had the system for our subscription sales, and they agreed to bear the upfront costs for those for that system to upgrade to the same day sales for online games, for the lotto style games, and to introduce our electronic instant tickets. They bore all of the upfront cost on that. But we did, they required to do that a clause that if Minnesota Lottery ceased the contract prior to the expiration, that we would negotiate a fair settlement to compensate them for their upfront costs and thus losses.
When's the expiration?
2018. And the number on the fiscal note was, you know, we simply contacted our vendor, Scientific Games, to get that number. They said roughly they thought that was their out-of-pocket cost, but they would get back to us with a more accurate number. After the fiscal note was drafted and issued, I did get a letter from them, and that figure actually is more like $4 million. But we have not adjusted the fiscal note because it had been finalized, and I guess it wasn't felt that that was a sufficient number to change it at that point.
Madam Chair, Mr. Van Patten, is there,
Representative Atkins.
Is there a force majeure clause in the contract?
There is.
Mr. Van Patten.
No, Madam Chair, Representative, there is a force majeure clause in the main contract that does describe governmental interference. Is that me?
Speaking of government,
somebody has their cell phone next to the mic, I think. If we, everyone wants to kind of move their cell phones a little farther away, that's probably the problem.
Governmental interference is considered a force majeure in the main contract. This clause was added to the amendment to that contract. So certainly the position of our vendor is that the amendment would control. We have not agreed to that, as I stated in your committee earlier. We're caught between a rock and a hard spot. Do we not report the possibility of this payment, and then we end up having to pay it, and we look foolish? Or do we tell you about the possibility of the payment and hopefully not have to make that payment? So that's why the number was included in the fiscal note. And I'm an attorney, and I know Representative Atkins is. There is an argument to be made that an amendment, written amendment to a contract would control, but that's up to the trial lawyers to decide, I think.
Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Mr. Van Patten. I think at this point I'm going to let some other folks ask a question or two, but I appreciate your responsiveness with respect to that.
Thank you.
Other questions from members of the conference committee?
May I ask one more?
Sure, sure. Senator Chamberlain.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to clarify, Mr. Van Patten, so fiscal year 2014, the total amount that we believe the vendors will be out would be about $4 million, and that would be the amount that, according to what we just talked about, we would want, that we would owe to the vendors, correct?
Mr. Van Patten.
Madam Chairman, Senator, my understanding is that would be the maximum we would owe.
Okay, thank you.
We don't have that in the fiscal note. How would you pay that cost to the vendors?
Well, I'm no accountant, but I assume out of our operating funds, Madam Chair. And that would, of course, then reduce the funds available for transfer to the state.
So the Environmental Trust Fund and the General Fund could take another hit.
Correct. Madam Chair, that's correct.
Can I ask...
Senator Chamberlain.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A couple more. Going back to contracts, from what I understand, we have... You're working with Link 3, one vendor, and they have two vendors. Is that correct?
Mr. Van Pen.
How did you select the vendors? You got Link 3, and then there's two software operations that... the supply equipment, is that correct?
Mr. Van Patten.
Madam Chair, Senator, if I'm following you here,
yeah.
That's correct at this time. There are a number of other software manufacturers that are trying to come online with this program. And, Senator, if I could clarify one point you made earlier, the lottery has never had any say in what stations get this software. The pilot program initially was by the Verifone company with their change in software. They solicited people to participate in their pilot program. We knew that software could support the Link 3 protocols, or Link 3 did. So Link 3 negotiated with Verifone. Verifone picked all of the retailers that participated in their pilot program. We now also are doing a pilot program with Gilbarco Veeder-Root, same scenario. Those vendors, those software point-of-sale providers, do all of the selection, all of the negotiation with regard to their systems. Then Link 3 simply piggybacks the lottery onto that system. There's never a cost to the retailer for the lottery portion of the software. And what is negotiated in the pilot by the point-of-sale provider, we have nothing to do with, and I have no idea what that agreement is.
Thank you, Ms.
Mr. Van Patten, when you gave us the $4 million in vendor payments, does that include both the Internet and the play at the pump, or is there a different charge for the play at the pump?
Madam
vendors?
Chair, members of the committee, the same gaming system runs both of those systems, as well as the ATM system. So it'd be just one cost. It's the same gaming system.
$4 million includes both?
Yes.
Okay. I'm sorry, I interrupted you, Senator Chamberlain.
Thank you. I just one more, Madam Chair. You've been very gracious. So just one general question. Again, I understand as a business person and a marketing trying to do certain things, but, you know, this is government, and especially in gaming and gambling, there is. Did you think about the impact, the fairness issue here about all these convenience stores, especially pay at the pump? One, and number two, how this impacts the traditional scratch-off charities that depend on this, how that might impact their business now. In the private sector, you know, business is business. As long as we have a fair level playing field, you know, go at it and try to take market share. But this is a heavily regulated function, process, business. And when we do something like this, government's holding the reins and has all the rules, sets the rules. So did you consider the impact on these smaller operations and on to the charitable operations and before you entered into this agreement? I mean, was that a conversation somebody had? I mean, this is a serious impact, and government is really essentially controlling how this runs.
Mr. Van Patten.
That's my final question.
Senator,
thank you.
It doesn't have to be. The pilot program with regard to fairness of the small operator, most of the operators in the pilot program are the small operators. They have found the program to be very beneficial to them. That's the nature of a pilot, is to find out what the effects are, find out if the technology works. We are continually being contacted by additional retailers wanting that software, and our intention, if we're allowed to continue, would be to be statewide as quickly as possible so that all vendors who are all retailers who want this technology would have it. I view it more as similar to a car wash. 20 years ago, very few service stations had a car wash. Now, probably 80 to 90% do. I don't know, but just driving down the street, it seems that they all do. So I don't see it as a fairness issue. I see it as an integration issue to try to get the technology available as quickly as possible once we prove it works. And that's what we are trying to do. With regard to impact on charitable gaming, as I said, this technology is available in close to 100 jurisdictions worldwide, and not one jurisdiction has reported any cannibalization on other types of gaming. It's such a limited market. Online sales of lottery products is not extremely glamorous. It's a convenience to people. It does not cannibalize other forms of gaming, and I've not seen one figure worldwide that would suggest that it does. And I certainly would have no intention of doing that. I think the charitable gaming system in Minnesota is very well run, and they're to be congratulated for the causes they fund. I think it's a great system, and I certainly have no intention of trying to harm them.
Mr. Van Petten, you were supposed to give us a report on the pilot project, the Play at the Pump pilot project last fall, and we're still waiting for that report. Is that report arrived in my office, Ms. Josephson? I've missed it.
No, ma'am. Madam Chair, that was part of the report for the hearings in November and December. I think the House hearing was in November, and your committee was in early December, and that report was part of that. But also included the electronic instant tickets, and that kind of stole the show. I'm not sure anybody remembers the rest of it, but there was a report made.
Okay, my memory fails me.
No.
Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the line of questioning by Representative Chamberlain, and kind of the big question there brought forth by Representative Atkins on the, I kind of feel like we're being held hostage, you know, with this $2.5 million, and now it sounds like it's more than that. And it's just, we have great discomfort, as you heard in the House. In the Tax Committee, it was pretty universal with the online, you know, just the steps that you've made. And I feel like as a House member, I feel like I'd be making a big mistake by not bringing up. It was pretty bipartisan. Representative Davids and Schoen and on and on and on. A lot of what we do is about relationships up here, and you know, I don't want to get into that, but it's just been a frustrating course. And now to hear that the chair has asked for information has not been provided. I've been selected to this conference committee, never been contacted by folks from your department or your organization. If I were to call the charitable gambling folks, I got a feeling they'd be in my office in about 4 minutes. And, to build a friendship and a relationship.
That's for me. Sorry.
They might be calling. But
I heard you.
I'll get to
it's a loud
second.
Ring.
But so it's frustrating for me to hear and to try to they even call twice. But I think it's just really frustrating. I feel like we're being held hostage, we're at the end of session and we're trying to put a budget together and the number just keeps growing. You know, so as a body, you know, what do we, it complicates things. I
didn't say what it was.
I'm greatly disappointed in so many different areas, and it's going to be really hard for me to support to move towards a Senate position on at the pump, certainly, and some of these other things too. But Keep going with your questions there, Senator Chamberlain.
Madam Chair.
Ms. Van Petten.
And members of the committee, Representative Lilly, I did contact your office yesterday to request a meeting, as well as Representative Hoppe's, and did not get a return call on that. And I,
so I'm just
I'm just telling you to let you know that I have attempted to provide any information you may wish. I apologize for my ignorance, and as was pointed out, I'm not in Kansas anymore. I realize that. But in Kansas, for 25 years of working with the legislature, it was, don't call us, we'll call you. If there wasn't something to report or a problem to be worked out, they didn't want us there. It is totally different here. The culture is different here, and I am learning that very rapidly. And Representative Atkins, as well as Senator Pappas, have pointed it out to me on a number of occasions. Quite honestly, I haven't found myself to be all that interesting, and didn't realize you felt like you were being deprived of information. But I have complied with every request for information that I've received, and appeared at every hearing I've been asked to be at. And the point is definitely well taken after the last month of my life, that I will be present in your offices more often and just make sure you are well informed on what's going on.
Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I know that the Senate is about due back. You're going to vote on some other things here shortly. But a couple things that before we adjourn for the day that I'd appreciate getting some response from the lottery on. One is to provide us with the actual contract and the amendment. And specifically what I'm looking for is when that contract was amended and what new functionality was provided for and at what cost. What I suspect is that there was the main contract that was adopted some time ago in 2010 that allowed for certain functionality, and then this new amendment, and at what cost that may have come. And then specifically something that demonstrates what the wrap-up time would be if we opted for to follow this course that the Senate has adopted. And Mr. Van Petten and I have visited somewhat with respect to that, but how long it would take to phase out, because there's obviously going to be people that already own these tickets and certain other things that would need to be followed in order to phase out any of these operations. Folks, there's in your packets, there is the, and it's faded at the top of mine, I believe it's the A14-1256 amendment. That amendment, my understanding, has been agreed to by all parties that are concerned about it. For those in the audience, all it allows for is that nursing homes or elder care places for guests to play bingo and for it to occur on five occasions rather than two. This has been shopped around, and it just never made it into the bill as we went through the committee process because it came in late. I would move the A14-1256, and it's my understanding that gambling control is okay with that, as are the charities.
It's my understanding, too, there's no controversy. We could call this Sandy's Mom Amendment. My mother loves bingo. And my sister and I like to play it with her, so we're covered. Although I don't think they play for money, but it does count if you get candy, I guess. You do still have to be licensed, so I better check to make sure they're licensed. I wouldn't want to be breaking the law when I'm playing bingo with my mom. Any questions, members of the conference committee? Any contradiction to how Representative Atkins portrayed this amendment? And on the motion to put the A14-1256 into the conference committee report, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Then, unfortunately, we do have to go back. The senators have to go back to the Senate floor. So the conference committee is adjourned for today. Kara, can you put this stuff into a file? I don't see folders here for us. Yes,